Blog Talk Radio.
And that's right, I hope you're fired up. We are here for the Jaguar Zone this week. We have a couple weeks, so much that has happened. And, of course, as I've been kind of teasing for a while now, I will be joined by Mr. Jacksonville himself, Mr. Jackson DeVille, a little later on. Can't wait to have him on. But first, need to run through a few little things real quick to catch you up on everything that's been going on. And there has been a lot. The Jags were able to get Bortles signed to a contract. Clearly, this looks better for the future as far as you know, securing the future quarterback. Because you know, no matter how good Chad Henne is, he's going to be the mentor to Bortles. That's the whole reason of sitting him out this year, is so that you can prepare him. You know, you can prepare him to take over. And Chad Henne is just that kind of guy to be able to mentor him. He's not going to want to, you know, overshadow him and still try to take his job or anything like that. He's going to be able to put Bortles in the right place to succeed. And, you know, if you think otherwise, you know, you can always catch us on our Facebook page. We're part of End Zone and Impact Media there. You can catch us on any of our Twitter handles, which are at 3EndZone or at the Impact 99 if you want to send me a jab personally. I don't mind. Or, as always, you can follow the links, as you're probably doing right now, or you can call 347-826-7448. Again, that's 347-826-7448. We'd love to hear from you. But, going back to the Bortles thing, We can beat this topic to death as everybody else has, or we can accept the fact that it's going to be, you know, it's going to be really cool the way it works out. But moving on, Jason Babin was released. You know, don't feel too super sad for Babin. He'll catch on somewhere. I'm here in Atlanta, maybe New Orleans, maybe even Oakland, I believe was the other one I had heard. But for what it was, Jason Babin was very good at what he did. He was able to come in. They created the new Leo position for him so that he could, not to create a position so that he could stay around, but to kind of revolutionize the game and the way it's played. Now, instead of the Leo this year, they're kind of using an auto, and I'll break that down on a future show. But, you know, just know that Jason Babin's going to be okay. He's not going to starve. He's been good with his money anyway, but you know, if he can't catch on as a veteran presence to another team, then I'm sure he'll be coaching somewhere because he's too talented to not be a part of the NFL. And, you know, we wish him the best on all his future endeavors to steal the line from pro wrestling, I guess. But I also want to commend the effort. This week's shout-out goes to all the Jags personnel, including my guest, Jackson DeVille, coming up here in a few short minutes, for all the Jags caravan stuff, because not every team is doing these things where they travel around and try to meet the fans and go around to you guys. Instead of you guys having to come to the stadium to see them, they're coming to you. This is, you know, I'm not going to say it's revolutionary, but Jacksonville is one of the few teams that actually do this consistently and try to get out there and just really show you how much they appreciate your support. Like I said, I commend the effort. They were able to send a lot of former FSU players down towards the FSU area down there. And as always, the lovely ladies of the Roar of the Jaguars were down there. And like I said, Jackson doesn't hardly miss any of these. He's probably at every one of them. He's just that kind of guy. But it's just really cool that you can go meet these guys and get to get that up close and personal. Maybe you can get a picture or an autograph or just that cool fan experience where you just get to shake somebody's hand or let them know that, hey, man, I'm pulling for you. And you know, you're one of the cool things I like about what's going on and all that sorts of stuff. But kind of the emerging leaders of this team at the current moment, and this is, you know, just off of what we've seen so far during practice, on the defensive side of the ball, clearly Posluszny, I'm saying his name right. I've never been able to say it right. I hope I did that time. But Poz is just that dominant presence in the middle of the field, and he's always the one trying to make plays and such, you know, like that. I mean, clearly he's going to be the leader on that side of the ball. And on the other side of the ball, and a lot of people thought this was interesting, but I think this is just par for the course for this guy. Mercedes Lewis, the veteran tight end, has, I won't say stepped up because he's always kind of been a leader of the team, but he's, I guess his efforts are actually being recognized a lot more by the national media. And a lot of people think he's doing it just to try to stay, you know, on top of everything so that he can keep a job. I think he's actually doing it just because the kind of guy he is. You know, with these kind of leaders, I mean, Chad Henne's considered a leader. You know, anybody on either side of the ball is, you know, worth, you know, anybody on either side of the ball could be considered a leader at this point. But I did want to update you guys. I have heard some things in the last couple Jacksonville sensation game of where in the world is Justin Blackman. A lot of you guys like to ask me that question. From what I've been able to gather, he is at a rehab facility in the Oklahoma City area. I'm not going to tell you which one or where in that particular area because it is a pretty big area, but just know that last reports say that he's doing quite well. A couple of his teammates, including Cecil Shorts III, have reached out to him and, you know, let him know that he has the support of his teammates and the fans and everything. And, you know, I think he's making strides and he's making the steps to, you know, recover and really turn this thing around and get back on the field. Because, you know, Jacksonville haven't made any motion whatsoever to try to cut this guy. And that tells you just that they think he's just a stand-up guy and that he's going through a little bit of a hardship. But, you know, San Francisco's done it with a couple of their players. Jacksonville's doing the same thing here. They're standing behind their guy because they believe he's not what a few mistakes are showing him to be. And, you know, we wish Justin the best as well on all that. And last thing I really want to hit on before we'll take a break and bring Jackson on, I wanted to kind of break down the running back position at the current moment because, you know, everything's kind of up in the air with Maurice Jones-Drew now in Oakland. A lot of people are like, well, we brought in this guy, we brought in that guy, we drafted this guy, we still had this guy. You know, who's supposed to be the starter, who's emerging? Well, I'm going to do my best to try to break this down. The reason they brought in Toby Gerhart, in my opinion, was to take over the majority of the carries that Maurice Jones-Drew would have had. Not bringing him in to be Maurice Jones-Drew because they're two completely different style runners, really. But Gerhart should be your starter. I would say maybe by three or four or five games in, Storm Johnson will take over the backup role, but for now I think he'll be third or fourth on the list. I think Jordan Todman is going to be your change of pace back as well as possibly your backup. They also have Bo Blankenship and Terrence Cobb. Both these guys could be competing for the backup spot as well, and everybody's kind of a change of pace thing. There's not really, of those five, there's not really two that are similar enough to be, you know, where you could go, well, we can get rid of one because this guy does the same thing. Or all five of these guys bring something totally different to it. But, you know, if you're an MJD fan, then Toby Gerhart's probably going to be your guy. Now, You know, if you're more of a speed or finesse type guy, you probably want to go with Storm Johnson or Jordan Todman. But, you know, also remember that Todman likes to has returned a lot of kicks over the years and plays a big role in special teams. So, I mean, there's a place on this team for everybody, I believe. And keeping four or five running backs like that is not uncommon. And, you know, it just the future looks bright to me as far as this running back core. But, as I said, I'm going to run to a break real quick. As I'm getting told by the producer here, we got to take a break and let the sponsors tell you why they're awesome. And when we come back, we'll have Jackson DeVille.
Jeremy the Impact York here from Mellow Mushroom. Are you looking for a great family-friendly restaurant with food that is great and healthy? Drop by the Mellow Mushroom. They use the freshest ingredients to make everything on their amazing menu. Pizzas, calzones, salads, and more, plus daily drink specials. Go to mellowmushroom.com to find the location nearest you. Jeremy the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business.
And we are back here on the Jaguar Zone. I hope you guys check out all our sponsors and tell them how much you appreciate allowing us to come on every week and talk Jaguar football. As much fun as it is, we do need those sponsors to help us out on that. But at this time, I do want to bring on my very, very special guest. Just overall one of the coolest guys that I've met in the world of football. And I don't know if all the accolades really help live up to how cool he can be at some time, but definitely the coolest cat on the block and in my opinion, one of the coolest mascots in sports. Mr. Jackson DeVille, how you doing today?
Hey, what's happening, man?
Not too much. Hopefully you guys are enjoying this lovely weather the same way we all are.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. This is the time of year that everybody at the stadium, you know, you walk through the stadium right now and it's kind of a ghost town. As soon as the coaches and players take off for their break, you know, it allows some of the other departments to get away a little bit before the madness of the season starts, because once that comes, everybody knows, you know, there's no break until February, especially this year since we're going to be in the playoffs. So
absolutely, I totally agree with that. But you know, for everybody who doesn't know, I guess in a way kind of unmasking you, so to say.
Yeah. I've been here, what, 18 seasons and going into my 19th. So it's not as much unmasking anymore because obviously, as you know, and everybody who's a Jaguar fan, Jacksonville's a big city with a kind of a small town kind of feel and camaraderie to it, and so that you can't go anywhere in this town, you know, working for the Jaguars and without people knowing or finding out or asking. So I also drive that van around that has the decals all over it, so it's tough to hide in that thing.
Yeah, it definitely is. But you know, for a lot of people that don't know, your real name is actually Curtis Dvorak, correct?
There you go.
So you know, Batman was Bruce Wayne, so now we know Jackson DeVille is Mr. Dvorak. And as always, it's good to have you on. But I know you do a lot of things, you know, outside of you know, being the coolest cat in the league. So, you know, that's kind of why I wanted to differentiate the two as well, because I know you've emceed a lot of charity events, and there's a lot of things that are, you know, near and dear to your heart that are not always Jaguar things.
Yeah, I've gotten, been lucky enough over the years through this this gig to meet a ton of people here in town and a bunch of different charity events. As much as I can help out with whether doing a live auction or making an appearance at it, I like to try and do that because I feel like I'm giving back a little bit. But yeah, there's definitely, over the last 10 years or so, tried to do more stuff out of the costume for a couple different reasons. One, I'm turning 40 in 2 weeks, so I realize
happy early birthday.
Thanks, man. Thanks. I realize I can't wear the fur forever. So doing these things to hopefully build up some kind of network and prospects for something to do afterwards. Because I know I'm definitely staying here in Duval. When all said and done, I'm I moved here from Virginia Tech, where I went to school, and like a lot of people who come down to this city, fell in love with it after living here so long, and so I got no plans to go anywhere else. So whatever I do after this is definitely going to be here in town, but not to scare anybody. I feel like I got a good 5 years, possibly longer, still in me. Like I said, I'm heading, my birthday is July 16th. I'm leaving this Sunday for a week in Spain, heading to go run with the Bulls. So,
definitely anticipate some video and or pictures of maybe some Twitter updates or something about that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. There'll be plenty of Twitter. I'm bringing a GoPro with me, so gonna wear the GoPro at least once. Gonna try and run multiple times. They run every day for a week, so I'm gonna try and get a couple runs in, but wear the GoPro and send some pics back. But it's gonna be a good time. So I figure, if I can go do that still, I can still wear the furry suit for a living for another handful of years. But I did go to HR today and check on my benefits and all that stuff and make sure those things are secure. Make sure those things are secure before I get over there.
I'm sure the missus made sure you were to check your policy before you go out of town there.
Yeah, you got to check all that stuff. So, it's been a blast, man. I'm really enjoying it. I'm really looking forward to this season. It's a definite, completely different feel in the building than I've ever experienced in 18 years. So it's exciting.
Well, and to kind of catch everybody up to speed real quickly, I know you had mentioned your Virginia Tech days a little bit there, but, how does a kid from Morristown, New Jersey find his way into a Jaguar costume in Jacksonville?
Well, I actually grew up in a town. Morristown, New Jersey is the big town,
right.
the closest big town to where I grew up. That's the only one people know. I spent my last few years there after I got out of high school in between, breaks from college. But Long Valley, New Jersey was a small little town that I went to school at Westmore Central. And I did the mascot there twice. And the only reason it was my senior year, we were the Wolfpack, and I happened to be hanging out by the cheerleaders before – the game. It was like a semifinal state championship game, and just happened to be hanging out there. It's a good place to hang out. So
right.
We're sitting there talking with them, and the coach came over and said, "Hey, we need somebody to get in the suit." So it was cold, and I figured, oh shoot, it'll be warm, good place to see the game, and what the heck, I'll do it. So I did it for that game, and then I did it for the state championship, and that was it. I was kind of like, all right, whatever, and then went to college and at Virginia Tech, and was a diehard sports fan, going to all the football games, all the basketball games, going to women's basketball games and baseball. The women's basketball game, closure, my dorm decided to go to because they offered the rowdiest dorm, most spirited dorm would win a free 6-foot sub. And, as a freshman in college, a free 6-foot sub for you and, 10 of your buddies at the dorm is as good as gold.
Oh, yeah,
so
free food is always good.
Yeah, when you're living off of $20 a week.
So
we loaded up and painted our chest up for a women's basketball game. And so we were kind of the idiots that led the cheers and some of the taunting of opposing players and stuff at basketball games. But it kind of came to sophomore year, and my buddies were like, man, you should try out to be the mascot. And I thought it'd be pretty cool because then I wouldn't have to camp out for tickets anymore.
Right.
And I'd get to be on the field for the game. So I decided to go out for it and ended up getting it. My sophomore year, they didn't have Kyle. My freshman year, because they had a couple guys already. Sophomore year, there was an opening and tried out and got it. And mostly, like I said, it was just a way I was going to be able to get, you know, for games and on the court. And I've always been kind of a cut up and class clown. And spent a lot of time in the principal's office in elementary and middle school. So got a lot of training there for this job. But I just was doing it because I thought it'd be a lot of fun and, again, get to hang out with cheerleaders. So
right.
So I did it, and then found out there was a competition involved, you know, in NCAA and UCA, you know, these cheer associations, they had a mascot competition. So I've always been a super competitive person, no matter what it is, and decided to go after that and ended up finishing second my junior year and won the national title my senior year. And it was at that point, senior year, that I realized, you know, as I'm watching this in 95, dating myself, but whatever, I already told you I'm turning 40. It was 95, and ESPN had all the, you know, the highlights where they're showing all the mascots doing dunks, and Billy the Marlin was all over them, and commercials, and kind of watching that, and I was like, wait a sec, because, you know, checked into it, found out it was a full-time gig, and was kind of blown away by that, that you could make a living doing this. So I was like, that beats working for a living, so I'm going to go after that. And, you know, put a resume together and was fortunate enough to get a sit-down meeting with Billy the Marlin at the time, John Root,
wow.
who was, you know, one of the icons in mascotting at that time.
Yeah, I was about to say, for people that don't know, he is one of those iconic people in the mascot world that, I mean, I guess you kind of followed in his footsteps as far as you've become one of the icon guys as well.
I've been blessed, man. This city has been amazing, and the support from Jaguar fans that basically created and made Jackson the character who he is. So, but yeah, he sat me down, and I got a chance to sit with him for a few hours and learn about the business. And just on a, you know, kind of off the top of his head, he's like, oh yeah, you know what? Actually, our minor league team, the Charlotte Knights, are having tryouts in February. You may want to check them out, and I'll give your name. So I went to the tryouts in February. In Charlotte for a AAA baseball club, and they needed me to start right away, and told them I had to graduate in May, and ended up, you know, kind of some weird things I picked up at, somehow right place, right time. The Jaguars happened to call the Charlotte Knights 2 months later in their research stage of doing mascots, and found the person I had interviewed with, and that person said, hey, you may want to check this guy Curtis out. He tried out for us and was really good, and but he couldn't start for us right away, so here you go. And the Jaguars called me a week after graduation in May and asked me if I wanted to try out for the gig. And then, you know, beat out 50 people for the job, and the rest has, you know, been here. So
yeah, because you beat out, like, you beat out at least 50-plus people for the Jaguar gig, which is impressive on its own.
Yeah, they had 50 people they invited to the tryout, but they'd gone through a few hundred resumes, but... You know, if you're being honest, a lot of the people, you know, that were trying out for it were just caught up in the excitement of the team and just wanting to be a part of the team in any way possible. A lot of them didn't have any mascot experience, so it's not. It sounds more impressive than it was, but there was a solid 10 or 12 that were former college mascots that were really good. And the thing that makes it, you know, really exciting as far as like an accomplishment for me is that the top six, you know, finishers, myself being, you know, who got the job, the other five behind me all went on to be professional mascots at various major league teams as far as baseball, hockey, basketball, and football. So it was the top six were solid guys, and everybody ended up being going on to pro career. So
wow, that is impressive. Kind of jumping into the some of the Jackson stuff, just because I'll get to some of the fan questions here in a minute. But is there really anything that kind of drives your behavior, and this is not a personal knock or nothing, but kind of drives the behavior of, you know, do you become Jackson once you put the mask on, or is Jackson just like an extension of your personality?
You know, it's changed over the years. Obviously, the longer you do it, the more it becomes, the more the two things kind of blend together. When I first started, it was a, you know, kind of a clear distinction between the two. But obviously, after 18 years, you know, there's times where I get caught, and my buddies will comment to me or holler at me that, you know, hey, you don't have the suit on right now, and it's kind of a cross. And there's things they see that I'm doing in the costume that I did also the Friday night previously while we were all out hanging out. So some of those inside jokes that my buddies see are some of the funniest bits I'll do, where there may be, you know, 50,000 people in the stands that have no idea what I'm doing, but there's 10 of my good buddies that know exactly what I'm doing. And so those are sometimes the some of the funnier bits, but it's kind of meshed together over the years, where you don't know where one starts and the other begins. But as far as what motivates, you know, there's a lot of stuff with the job that, sure, the heat is tough. You know, some of the events, you know, maybe aren't the most fun to do when you're standing on a street corner just waving at traffic. Sure, there's moments of the job where you sit there and go, dang, there's got to be a better way to make a living. But but those are few and far between, and those little ones are things you can put up with for the majority of the job. That is absolutely amazing, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. And but I've always been, whether you ask, you know, parents or any teachers, whatever, I love making people laugh and entertaining people. And the fact that I get to do that for a living, I mean, I do it for free on a daily basis, like I said, with my friends and stuff. And the fact that I get to make a living entertaining people just is humbling, and feel truly blessed. And the fact that, you know, the stuff I do, most of the stuff I do it because I think it's funny. And the fact that other people find it amusing as well is always fun. So.
Oh yeah, and let's see. You know, I've had Brett from the Till Street Hooligans on, and I'm a card carrying member for a couple years now, the Bold City Brigade. But it seems like every tailgate, you always make it a point to go down and party with these guys. What makes these guys so special down there?
I'll tell you what, you know, the Bold City Brigade and the Teal Street Hooligans, you know, I met Brett when he was working at Tropical Smoothie Cafe over at Butler and US One.
Wow.
And met him, and I'd get my sandwiches, and we'd talk Jaguar football. But he, those guys, man, you know, it's something that Wayne Weaver talked about for years, for the last 5 to 7 years he owned the team, and he constantly hammered it, saying, we just need a little more time, because the generation, and you know, I love that they named themselves Generation Jaguar, the generation is coming, and those guys, you know, are the ones that, now this part's depressing for me sometimes, because when I run into some of the hooligans or the Bold City Brigade members, and they go, hey, man, you came to my first grade class. I'm like, oh, that's
wow.
Awful. And now we're sharing a beer together, but whatever. so, you know, that's the generation, though, and that's what Wayne was getting at. And that's, you know, and we're still in that mode where we need another 5 years, you know, another generation. The kids who, I say this all the time, when we first got here in the late 90s, and started up, sure, you know, AFC Championship in 96, great. Everybody's a fan, you know. Everybody's a fan when you're winning, you know.
Yeah.
It's the event to be at, the playoffs, you know. Then you're in the playoffs the next year, and fourth year, you know, you're in the AFC Championship again at home. You know, it's really easy to be a fan of that.
Right.
And but once things started to go bad, what I started, and I'm out in the community 350-plus times a year, so I'm – on the front lines all the time, and what I constantly started hearing was, it was like, Jacksonville's such a transient city, and it's very easy when the team starts losing for the adults and the parents and people to go, oh, you know what? I'm a Dolphins fan. Jaguars are kind of my second team. Or I'm a Bucs fan when the Bucs won the Super Bowl. Oh, yeah, I've always been a Bucs fan.
yeah.
It's very easy for an adult who just got onto the team at, you know, after, you know, at 25, 30 years old or 35, to leave that allegiance, you know, to give it up because it doesn't – it's not ingrained in them. But the kids who were here in 95 and 96 and were 4 years old and 5 years old, this is our 20th season. They're 24. They're 25. The kids who were 10 years old and knew football and loved football, they're now 30 years old. They have jobs. They have disposable income. They've grown up with this team. This team is a part of their soul. This team is a part of their blood. And they're not giving up that allegiance for anything. Win or lose, it doesn't matter. They're going to be there. And that's who the Bold Shooter Brigade and the Peel Street Hooligans are. You know, they know we've had, you know, sure, national media makes fun of us for the, you know, because we have the worst record in the past 3 years or least amount of wins or something of any team. Well, that's fine to them, though. They're still going to be at Duval and Bryan, you know, circling up and tailgating before each game. Doesn't matter, you know, what the odds makers say, you know, going into the game or what everybody thinks of us or wants to make fun of us nationally. They believe every tailgate, you know, whether right or wrong, they believe every tailgate, you know, we got a game today, we got a chance to play, and we're going to win. So that's the character of and the personality of Jackson. He's the exact same as them. The reason I relate to them and love what they're doing is because that's who I created Jackson to be is no matter what, doesn't matter what, you know, anyone says or even if we only have 11 players suited up for the game. Jackson and myself as a fan, I go into every single game believing that we're going to win because I just know I don't know any other way to live life. I don't see a benefit in living life negatively and being like, oh, we suck or we got no shot here. There's just no fun to that to me. Even if 10 experts tell me we got no chance of winning, what's the point of taking the field? There's no fun in that.
Exactly. That, you know, that's why we watch the game is because the best team on paper doesn't always win on grass.
Sure. Absolutely.
And when I was one of the games that I attended last year was the Cardinals game. And as I was down there and interacting with some people and I'd met up with some people I knew down there, between the Jags walk and just the feel and the electricity in the air of, you know, because that was right at the second half where everything was starting to just shoot up. Everybody was starting to take notice of the changes in Jacksonville and stuff like that. But, you know, I was texting buddies back home and sending them videos and stuff, and I was like, it feels like a Super Bowl in this stadium because of just the crowd reaction. I said, the city is behind this team. I said, they don't care what the national media says their record should be or if they even have a shot. It's the same things you were just saying that, you know, they care. You guys care about the team and about what the team does.
Yeah. It's, you know, the great thing that, and I always say it whenever we get beat on by, and I've taken on a few national columnists on Twitter and let them know when I don't appreciate what they're saying. Cause it's fine. You want to make jokes and stuff. But the best thing about Jacksonville and the way I relate it is, you know, there's a hashtag on Twitter that's pretty hilarious, Duval thing. And it's, you know, the way I relate it to is it's like when you're growing up and you got brothers and sisters and, you know, you can call your brother an idiot, you can call him stupid, you can punch him in the face. But if anybody else outside your family touches him, says a word about him that's negative, whether it's true or not, it's time to fight. And that's what you know, the Bold Shooter Brigade and the Hooligans in Jacksonville, you know, the Jaguars fans, and that's what this city's about. You know, the people who, I say this all the time, I love this city because I love golf. I live on the beach right now. I love the beach. I love the water, the river. I love boating. And so for me, this city is, you know, is home, and it's always going to be my home. And I don't care. It doesn't bother me if you, you know, national media guy, if you came here for the Super Bowl and you didn't like it. It doesn't bother me. If you want to write your articles, that's fine. I don't give a rat's ass if you like my city or not. And that's kind of the mentality is like the fun part is going to be you may not like our city and all you national media who cracked on it. That's fine. You don't like it. Well, we're going to make you have to come here because we're building something great, and you're going to have to come cover our games, and you're going to have, and you know what? You're going to have to stay at the hotel you don't like that doesn't give you the same five-star service or whatever, you know, because the best ones are sold out, or we don't have enough luxury hotels, you know, or we don't have, you know, the entertainment that you like in South Beach or New Orleans or whatever. But you're going to have to come here, and you're going to have to cover our games, and that's going to be the fun part when all those national columnists who rag on us and stuff have to sit here for a playoff game.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And not just your overall presence at a game, but you're kind of known for some of the bigger risks and stunts you've done, and including recently with the bungee jumping, the zip lines, and stuff like that. Before we kind of get into those, at any point, are you scared during any of this?
On game day, never. On game day, I've already done all the rehearsal. We've done all the tests. When it's live, there's no better feeling in the world, and it's exciting. There are times during rehearsal or during setup when we're setting up a brand new stunt that we've never tried before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting ready to do it for the first time. Sure, there's a couple moments of, all right, everything we've talked about, you know, and written out on paper, theoretically, this should work. but we don't. But you know, the thing we joke about is there's no book. You know, there's no book for us to open and go, all right, how do you do, you know, a double backflip off a light tower, not hit the feet and make it to the field?
Right.
There's no book on this. This is all, you know, trial by error. And that's why, you know, every stunt we always throw weights off first. You know, the first thing we do is take 200 pounds of weights from the weight room and strap those to the trolleys and everything. We throw those off first. And I always tell people, if those don't make a divot in the field, then I go. So
that's a pretty good rule of thumb.
It's a pretty easy system. You know, if those don't have any paint marks on them or aren't buried, you know, 3 feet below the turf, then it's okay for me to go. But no, I don't get scared. I really enjoy it. I live for adrenaline. I love it. And getting to do that stuff, you know, there are moments, don't get me wrong, there are moments during rehearsal where I'm standing up there, and we've had some where it's raining and it's cold, and there's a couple lights on in the stadium, and that's it. And I'm looking at the field. I'm looking at an empty stadium with no energy in it. And I'm about to try a gainer for the first time off a slippery plastic platform, you know, with thunderclouds off in the distance. And we're on a, you know, steel metal light tower. And I kind of have a pause and go, man, I probably could find another way to make a living. But then I quickly look at it and go, you got to be kidding me. I get to do this on top of this stadium, and how many people would kill to have this opportunity?
Well, you know, wasn't trying to make it sound bad or nothing, but maybe it's the butterflies before a big moment or something like that. And the best way I can relate it is I come from a little bit of a pro wrestling background, not much, but I was a part of a lot of shows, and I've had some of the top acts that I've come across and even some of the middle or even smaller guys that say it's, you know, they get butterflies before every show, and when they stop getting butterflies is when they worry about it.
Oh my God! Oh, absolutely. There is no doubt. Every single time I'm getting ready to go, it is hair standing up. You know, I don't call it nervous. There's anxious. I mean, there's been stunts. Yeah, there's some people. If you talk to some of the people in game ops and things like that, there's moments. You know, during our pregame meeting, there's times when I'm doing a big stunt that I haven't done before that I'm a little bit chippy. You know, a little bit on edge, because until it goes off perfect, you know, I'm not an idiot. And that's the thing, when you're doing stunt work and you're doing live stunt work, and that's the same thing you're talking about with the pro wrestlers.
Right.
You're doing live stunt work, and everything is planned out and everything is set the way you're going to do it. But, you know, I know with every single stunt that there is a potential for injury. There's a potential for worst case scenario, you know? And I don't go into it blindly. But the butterflies, exactly, that's the exact point. If you're not feeling those, that's when you get careless, and that's when accidents happen. So we are extremely focused. You know, it's kind of an anxious focus, double-checking, you know, saying things over and over just to hear them out loud. Wembley this year, Wembley was absolutely insane. It was the gnarliest stunt I've done simply because of the amount of free fall in the line. To give you an idea, at the Jag Stadium, the center towers, when I jumped from around the 50-yard line, like towers, you know,
right.
We've had 25 feet of line of leash out there, which once I jump 25 feet, then the stretch, and, you know, you get about 40 feet of free fall out of that before the line
wow.
grabs and you're flying. So those were the biggest ones we'd done. Well, we get to Wembley, and where we set up, we look down below, and we've got 120, 130 feet till the seats. And we're
wow.
looking there going, man, we can put out as much rope as we want. We put out 50 feet of line hanging out there, and I jumped. And the first time I jumped, I heard a sound that I had never heard before in any of my live stunts except for skydiving. And that's the sound of terminal velocity. And anybody who skydives knows what the sound of terminal velocity is. When you jump and still air suddenly becomes, you know, 120 miles an hour, and you hear the wind rushing by your ears. And I heard that sound in Wembley, and it's funny. I had a GoPro on my chest looking at my face, and there's a picture I've never released that my head stunt rigger put out on his Facebook. And it was two pictures. It was one picture, still shot, screenshot of me. This is what your face looks like the moment before you jump from 200 feet, you know, anticipating, you know, whatever, 70, 80 feet of free fall. And then the next picture was, you know, and it's me with my lips are, like, tight together, and I kind of got my underbite coming up, like, tense lips, you know, focused, staring straight ahead. And then the next picture is I'm in the middle of free fall. He goes, this is what your face looks like in the middle of free fall, realizing the rope hasn't grabbed yet. And my mouth is open, and there is this look of like, oh, my, you know. And
yeah.
When that thing grabbed, it was such a drastic impact on that stunt that we had to dial it back a little bit, and we actually had to stop rehearsal on Saturday and not do as many rehearsals as we wanted to because my head rigger was like, your body physically can't take during rehearsal, you can't do the game tomorrow. So I was having to wrap a large towel, like twist a towel and wrap it around the back of my neck and tuck it into my jacket as a neck brace because the impact was so violent at the bottom that it was like a whiplash. And that was one that was on big ones like that is where I lose sleep at night the night before, and you just kind of get, you know, you've practiced it, but you still get those kind of daymare, you know, flinches
yeah.
where you just kind of flinch for no reason. So, but yeah, it's, I know it's dangerous. I know what I do. Live stunt work is not, you know, obviously it's not an A rating for life insurance, but, but I also love it, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. The adrenaline rush, and it's what I live for. So,
well, since you brought up the experience in Wembley Stadium, and not just the stunts, but the city of Jacksonville is quite a soccer community in itself, especially with the minor league team down there and everything. But like the city of Jacksonville was able to, you guys hosted a World Cup friendly right before the World Cup, and just kind of helped wrangle everybody into this U.S. men's team and the great things they're doing right now.
Oh, man. I unfortunately was out of town during the Nigeria USA friendly. I had a trip scheduled that I couldn't get out of, and I missed that game. But I am obviously with Shad Bion, even before he bought Fulham last year, I followed the EPL, and I'm a big soccer fan. I wouldn't say I'm a snocker, you know, which is like the soccer fans that, you know, don't let anybody else like the sport.
Right.
But I love the sport. I love the World Cup. And, you know, some of it is obviously national pride. I'm a huge military guy. you know, American pride. I have no problem flying the American flag in anybody's face. I'm a nationalistic American, and I don't shy away from it.
Definitely
but
nothing
I,
wrong with that.
Yeah, I absolutely love this World Cup, and I am having a blast with it. We have a huge tomorrow at the Shim Sham Room, which I'm one of the owners of here in Jacksonville Beach. I mean, it's probably the best bar in Jacksonville. I'm a little biased, but we're doing a big party there. And my friends at PRI were nice enough to help us out, bringing in some huge TVs. And we've done every game there so far. And it is so much fun. There is nothing better. I've had a couple buddies who are kind of into soccer and we're kind of like, you know, back and forth about, oh, whatever. And I'm like, if you didn't, you know, that game, I asked them real quick. I'm like, where'd you watch the game? And they're like, well, I watched it at the house. And I'm like, well, then you didn't experience what the World Cup's about.
You have to watch it with people.
Absolutely. You cannot experience the World Cup sitting at your house by yourself watching it on your TV. There is no better feeling or experience than being out at a place, you know, obviously the Shim Sham Room is where I want you, but being out at any bar, any number of the hundreds of bars in Jacksonville are all going to be packed. 1010XL is doing a big one. You know, Shim Sham Room is doing one. The Armada, you know, they're doing one at Blackman. Lynch's, the American Outlaws are going to be packed there. And there is no better experience than watching the soccer game. You know, football you watch, you know, baseball you watch, it's just a different viewing because, you know, football you watch the play and then you grab your wings and you talk to your buddies while they huddle and,
right.
and the next play is getting ready to start. Soccer, and especially the World Cup, and especially a game where it's winner-take-all, every pass, every time the ball crosses midfield into your zone, you're tense because you don't want a cross to come across the middle. Every corner piece, whether it's against you or for you, you're tense, you're grabbing the thing because it could be the one that determines the entire game. And it's just when a goal goes in, man, we almost collapsed the building during that Porto game. And it's just an amazing experience. I mean, you can look at YouTube all over the place and see all the celebrations. It's there's nothing better than being with, you know, fellow Americans all cheering for one team because that's the biggest difference. There's no other sport or no other event. You know, Super Bowl, it's split. People are cheering for both teams.
Right.
You know, most games, it's split. People are cheering for both teams. This game, you know, and for the U.S. men's national team, and you're here in the States, everybody in the bar, I didn't see anybody cheering for the other team, everybody in the bar is cheering for the same team, and the energy is absolutely unbelievable. So I love it, and I can't wait to beat Belgium and July 5th, play the winner of Switzerland and Argentina,
which if it were my opinion, I think Argentina is gonna probably beat them 3-2 in a close one. But yeah, the United States have, I mean, arguably to draw Belgium in this knockout round. I'm not saying they're the easiest team, but as far as the way they match up, the U.S. has a really, really high legitimate chance of winning and going on to that next game.
Absolutely, I have no doubt. You know, there's not a team, you know, I look at the Germany game and everybody says, wow, it was the biggest 1-0 domination, you know, I've ever seen, whatever, Germany controlled the ball. Well, it doesn't matter. Every game, my buddy said this best, who follows soccer religiously, every game is its own entity. One game doesn't carry on to the other, and that's what's so great about soccer. Like football, you can study the plays and you can study, okay, when they set up in this formation, 80% of the time they run left. You know, when
right.
they set up in the formation, 60% of the time they throw to the tight end. You can study those metrics. You can do that. Soccer's not like that. Yeah, maybe they like to attack from the left, you know, a little more than that, but each ball is in every game. It literally takes one set piece. We saw that in the Ghana game. We got outplayed by Ghana. Ghana controlled the ball, and we didn't look good. Bradley didn't look good. He's getting a lot of heat for it, but we didn't look good. We didn't control the ball, and all it took was one set piece. One set
yep.
piece made the difference in that game, and if you capitalize on those, you can beat any team in the world. I mean, Costa Rica's, you know, a great example. Mexico, another great example. You know, I mean, yeah, they got knocked out the other day, but they had their chance, you know, and almost pulled off the big upset. But there's no reason. Belgium doesn't scare me. I mean, I know they won all three of their games, and everybody says they haven't played their best. But But, I mean, we saw it today, Germany and Algeria. Everybody's like, I wish we could have gotten to play Algeria. Well, not judging by what I saw. Algeria played great. You know, it took overtime for Germany to beat them.
Yep.
So it's great, man. It's going to be fun. You know, win or lose, you know, it's a fun experience, and I'm glad that that the country as a whole is, you know, over the last 10 years, soccer is getting more and more popular, and I think it's only going to get bigger. ESPN just signed a deal for MLS that was huge for the TV rights, so it's only going to get bigger, and you know, I'm excited for my friends at the Armada to support them next year when they start up, and get a chance to follow a professional team here locally.
Yeah, it should be great, and I think Jacksonville is great. Is by far one of the greater cities to be able to take on the soccer movement and help take it to the next level. But we do have some questions that people sent in. As I've said before, you are quite popular, so even mentioning your name, I got quite a few questions. I tried to narrow it down to some of the bigger ones here. We'll try to hit them as quick as we can. Skydiving, bungee jumping, motorcycle riding, zip lining. Is there anything you'd like to do that you've not done yet?
We're still working on a cannon. We're still working on being shot out of a cannon. I've pursued it. I've tried to make it happen. The people who have the cannons that you can shoot people out of to date have not allowed. They won't allow anybody else to shoot out of it. And I don't want to give them the suit and have them wear it. That's not what I'm into. And so we haven't been able to do that one. The other one I've always wanted to do, because like I said, I'm a huge military buff. I've always wanted to have a Blackhawk fly over the stadium, come over to the center of the field, and straight rope down with some Black Ops, Special Ops guys.
Wow, that
straight
would
rope
be very
down
cool.
To the field. Because that would be a lot of fun too. Because a straight rope, you know, that's a bit of a rush as well, man. You got nothing holding you to the line except your hands and your feet. But I've always wanted to do that, and the thing, I can't get the FAA to clear that one either because they won't allow a helicopter to fly that low over people.
Right.
So, haven't been able to get those two, but everything else, you know, I've been blessed and lucky enough that, you know, when Wayne was here, I'd go into his office and say, hey, Wayne, I want to try this, and he would, for the most part, just say, show me the insurance certificate and you can do it. He said no a lot. You know, that's the one thing I tell people. Like, oh, you're skipped, you know, this and that. I love what you did there. I'm like, well, the funny part is 50% of what I've come up with has been denied, censored, because it's either too risky or too offensive. But that's, you know, obviously it's good to have censors in some things because probably would have angered quite a few people with some of the skits. But there's nothing I haven't that I really want to do that they've been that they haven't let me do. So it's I'm pretty lucky. The fans here have made this character who it is, because without the fans' support of the skits and all the stuff over the years, I'd have been fired a long time ago. You know, because there was lots of owners around the league and coaches wanted me fired. And actually wrote letters to the league, and they brought it up in owners' meetings and pushed for me to be fired. And Wayne was, you know, always had my back. And Shad has expressed the same sentiments, that their goal is the same as mine. You know, and Shad's goal is everybody at that team, you know, in game ops, we all understand, and everybody in the stadium understands, that when you come to a game, you're spending a lot of your money that you've earned. And for you to spend that money is you know, we are lucky to have you. And all I want every time somebody comes to the game for 3 hours, 3.5 hours, whatever it is I want you to leave feeling like you got your money's worth. Because, you know, I can't control the wins and losses.
Right.
I can't control the points on the field. Yeah, I can get in the other team's head a little bit, and maybe I can hit the goalpost when Morton Anderson's gonna kick, and I'll take credit for that miss, but I can't control the score on the field. But what I can control is your experience at the game. And if I can create some moments, whether it's, hey man, you got to watch some dude almost kill himself jumping off a light tower, or you got to watch, you know, a really funny skit where he made fun of Tiger Woods or something else. Where, you know, we had a moment. I call them water cooler moments. I call them moments that on Monday that people are standing around going, man, you should have been at the stadium because you didn't see this on TV and you can't get this experience on TV. And I just want everybody to feel like they got their money's worth, whether we won or lost the game. So.
Yeah, definitely. I do think that's what it's all about. Next question was, what is your favorite Jaguar memory?
Favorite Jaguar memory? I mean, if it's game-wise, you know, in an actual game at home, it would be, you know, possibly the kick, the 59-yard field goal that I caught.
The Scobie kick. Yeah, that Scobie I was about to say, that by far jumps to the top of my list just because I remember I was watching that game on TV and everybody's like, why are you watching that game? I was like, there's something special about to happen in this game. And it got all the way and the kick comes up. I mean, I think only Scobie could make it at that point. The kick goes up. All of a sudden you have it and you're like already two-thirds away across the field about to just bum rush him. And it just was – it was that electric moment that I just felt was about to happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's no that one, I'll remember that forever. I'll remember the Morton Anderson kick.
Yeah.
I'll remember the Mike Thomas Hail Mary. You know, moments like that you know, you can see on TV and experience, and it's similar to the U.S. soccer thing we were just talking about. You know, you can watch it at home, and you can sit on your couch, and sure, there's a lot of benefits. There's a lot of pros to staying at home. You know, that you can lift, but the one thing you can't get, and you can sit at a bar, but there's 10 other games on, and everybody's cheering. There's you know, 8 different teams that everybody's cheering for. There's no experience like being in that stadium when great moments happen. And you can see them on TV and you can see them on SportsCenter, you can see the replay, but there's nothing like being there when that moment happened, you know, against the Colts. And when that moment happened against the Texans, I believe it was, when Thomas caught that Hail Mary, you can't recreate those. You know, as far as my best moment, you know, with doing this job, I mean, there's a bunch of them. One of them would be that run in 96, and it would be that Denver game. Being in that stadium while, you know, that 10,000 people, 5,000 to 10,000 people were in the stadium to watch the game on the big screen. And we watched it, and then we win the game. And the game ends, and everybody's clearing out, and all of a sudden we're, you know, inside this game ops. We're like, all right, let's get dressed. Let's head to the bars, let's drink. And all of a sudden we hear that there's 5,000 people outside the gate, and it's, you know, 8 o'clock at night. And we're like, what do you mean? And they're like, no, there's people outside the gate. They want to come back in. They want to wait for the team because everybody's telling them, don't go to the airport. Don't go to the airport. You can't go there because the week before, everybody had gone to the airport, and they didn't realize the team doesn't come through the terminal. The team goes to a private, you know, tarmac and gets on a bus right off the plane. So they were telling them, don't go to the airport. And then all of a sudden people were going to the stadium because they're like, we're going to wait for them there because they got to come back and get their cars. And my boss goes, they go, you know what, open the gates. We got to open the gates. We open the gates, and suddenly it just starts going more and more and more. 40,000 people end up in that stadium, and it's 11 o'clock. It's midnight. It's 12 o'clock at night, and I'm entertaining the fans, doing whatever I can. We're doing signs. We're doing chants, you know, all this stuff, and I am the most tired I've ever been in my life, and that plane flies over the stadium and dips its wing, and the energy, the hair's standing up on my arm right now as I tell the story, and I'm not lying, and it's that plane dips its wing, and you see a 737 at about FAA, if you're listening, earmuffs. You see a 737 at about 3,000 feet dip its wing and do a bank turn over that stadium, which the pilot did to show the players what was happening in Jacksonville, and that 40,000 people were waiting for them to get home, and they come into that stadium from the airport and. You know, there again, large crowd, you know, your own, everybody rooting for the same team. You can't recreate those experiences. And those are things I'll never forget. On a more personal note, things that weren't as big and publicized, my trips overseas to visit the troops.
I hate to cut you short, but we are running out of time. We'll get more into that on the next time we have you on.
Yeah, man.
Curtis, I definitely appreciate you calling in. And anybody that wants to watch the game tomorrow can go to the Shim Sham. But for Curtis Dvorak or Jackson DeVille, I'm Jeremy York. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, man. Talk to you soon.